Welcome to our third episode of Really, the podcast in which we have interesting discussions about current events and topics that involve everybody. And we have a special guest today. I'd like to introduce Tom Dolan. Tom, you're there by phone from Fernandina Beach, Florida. That's correct?
Yes, Dina. Thank you for having me.
Oh, are you, that's on the Atlantic coast of Florida, isn't it?
I'm on the Atlantic coast, yeah. We're just south of St. Mary's, Georgia.
And aren't you very near Amelia Island Plantation?
Yes, I am. I'm on Amelia Island, and Fernandina Beach is the town at the north side, and the plantation is at the south side.
Right, so you're familiar with American Beach?
Yes, absolutely.
Yeah, I was very interested in the story of American Beach.
What is
it? I drove by it, and I couldn't see anything historical about it, but I did read the history of it, yes.
Well, you know the history of it, and how it was for the only place on the Atlantic seaboard that the black people could go swimming, and they were forbidden on the Jacksonville beaches until after 5 at night and before 6 in the morning and never on weekends. And I know I got a book in the Fernandino bookstore about American Beach. And I didn't know anything about it, and I thought it was really, really interesting, that black-held property and how it's being encroached now by the Ritz Hotel on one side and the plantation on the other, and they're really being squeezed out.
Well, the hotel went bankrupt, and the plantation is in, I would say, sort of a purgatory financial status while they resolve that.
Well, that's good
news. So I think encroachment has fallen apart. Right. I don't think it's going to get encroached in the next decade.
Well, you've got a great bookstore there in Fernandina. It was one of the last independent bookshops, and I thought the guy was really interesting.
Well,
yeah, I've been in the store, and I learned it by reading, getting the island history.
Well, great. Well, Tom, we know a little bit about Linda and Joan, but could you just give us a quick CV on your background?
I worked in technology sales, and I built a technology sales company and traveled the world selling all the parts and pieces that go into the internet. And I'm also involved in some international business development. Certain internet business. So I'm working on a bunch of website projects to try to create some new businesses.
That's great. Well, I think one of the reasons that we've asked you to join us today is we have Carol Ann McLaughlin, who's usually here. She's not here today. We miss her. But she lends maybe a more conservative voice to our panel. And we were wondering, I think our first question is, what you think of the current presidential slate for the Republican Party? And don't be offended, but I think my friends here will be quick to interrupt. And that's how we keep the conversation going. So what do you think of the slate?
Well, I think Romney's going to win, and I think the other ones are creating certain positions that may carry through in some form to what the intentions of hopefully a new administration would be. I mean, for example, Ron Paul, I think, has done an excellent job of pointing out the fragility of our money system and our fiscal circumstances. And I'm pretty sure from him, he understood wouldn't win the nomination, but he's used that to be a platform to get some important ideas out there. And Gingrich as well has gotten some important ideas as ways to get things accomplished as opposed to ways to legislate and get ourselves bound up in bureaucracies. So, and obviously the normal press baiting goes on for Republicans, so they're, at times they get themselves into non-issues with the press, but I think Republicans in general kind of disregard that.
Excuse me, Tom, I was wondering how you feel about those non-issues, I think you're referring perhaps to the ones that came up around Santorum? Mm-hmm. The social issues, as
well, there's non-issues around it. There's one around Romney today about his Etch-a-Sketch, the Etch-a-Sketch comment.
Yeah, it's been great for the Etch-a-Sketch company, though. Their sales have zoomed.
Yeah, that's good. Good, yeah. So that sort of stuff, I think, is just a distraction. I don't think it influences Republicans
how
they're going to vote.
How about the week that...
I can tell you one thing. It was a thrill this year to be in Florida and vote in a Republican primary that counted after so many years of living in blue states.
Oh, boo-hoo. Boo-hoo.
Boo-hoo.
What were you going to say, Joan?
I was just wondering whether you felt the social issues that have been coming up belong in the campaign.
Well, social issues are important. If you look at the French terrorism issue, you know, it's a matter of how do you define your culture and what is your culture? Social issues are important, and there are people who have both sides of opinion on social issues. I don't think that they have no role, and I think certainly the press has succeeded in baiting Santorum, and he's gotten off message and chatted too much about certain things. But that's why you have a primary, so they can get tested.
Yeah.
I mean, I think Obama's phenomenal throwing this birth control issue out. And then the Republicans, I think, to their detriment, jump at it like mad dogs and then allow it to be misinterpreted.
I think that was just part of his slate, though, for health care for everybody and trying to keep it nonpartisan. Non-religious, I don't think that he was really throwing out a challenge on birth control per se. It was just a broad interpretation of health issues. And I think from what we hear, that the majority of women, at least those who want to speak out, agree with that. If you don't want to make use of it, you don't have to.
Yeah, I mean, you hit the nail on the head there. Is that Linda?
Yes.
Yeah.
Linda.
Hi.
Yeah, Linda, you hit on the head because the whole issue is that the federal government now defines the scope of what is a health care issue. And it's no longer an issue between people and their doctors and people and their health community. They deal with it. It is a bureaucratic decision made by Washington. And that's the essential point that the Republicans have, that if we allow everything to get taken over by the government, we become subjects of the government, no longer of a free democracy.
There's no question about that, but if you don't want the federal government to call the shots, then there have to be viable alternatives. And we wouldn't be having this discussion during Obama if way back under Nixon, even under Eisenhower, we'd gone in for national health care, which Canada did in the 50s, and we did not. I mean, I think everybody agrees we don't want...
I think we ought to do it. We ought to do it. We ought to go into national health care. What we ought to do is get 10 states to adopt the Canadian plan and see how it works.
Right.
And let Canada administer it.
Well, that's a good idea.
We don't have a Canadian plan now. We don't have national health care. If that's what you wanted, that's not what we got. We have a requirement that you get a private health care coverage.
Well, that's because the single... The single payer option got kicked out. If we'd had the single-payer option, we would have more of a Canadian system, but that got kicked out in the very beginning.
Well, you know, it didn't get kicked out because Russian army came over and said we couldn't have it. It got kicked out because the majority of citizens were going to town halls and screaming that they didn't want it. And that's the thing with democracy. You may want the Canadian system. Unfortunately, if you want it right now, you need to move to Canada because most Americans don't want it.
Well, I think most people who speak against it don't even know what it's comprised of.
I do. I was the CEO of an international company. So I do, because I know the health care issues of the employees that we had around the world in 30 countries. And there's lots of benefits to the systems that are in different countries. I think Singapore has a phenomenal system.
And I understand Taiwan does.
Yeah, so there's lots of better systems.
And Switzerland.
But the system that we adopted happens to be we took something and we made it worse.
Is there a lot of blame to throw at the insurance industry for this argument?
I think if you're talking about what happens in the public discourse, what happens in Congress, mm-hmm. you have to throw the blame back on voters and people. We're the ones that put those. We put Frank Pallone there to be a career guy from Monmouth County. And so we'll liable for whatever Frank Pallone votes for. I don't think that's a function of insurance companies, because insurance companies don't.
It just seems that more and more we hear the complaints that people express about our health system, be they physicians or patients. It all seems to land back on the doorstep of the insurance companies who supposedly are calling the shots for how long you'll stay in the hospital, what kind of treatment you're going to be eligible for. I don't know if that's true or not, but it seems that seems to be the easiest place to place the blame.
And their profits are growing, too.
And their profits are growing enormously.
I think you're correct in that they're calling shots for their insured pool. But there's a check and balance in it now. I don't know if that check and balance will be in there when the government takes full control. Today, the insurance company does control your access. And if you don't like it, you go to your employer and scream. And maybe it makes no difference, or maybe it makes some difference, or maybe you quit and get a job with better coverage.
Or maybe you get fired.
Yeah.
That's true.
So, once the government takes over, it will be like complaining about Social Security. You're just complaining to the wind.
Well, I notice the people who do complain about Social Security don't hesitate to cash their checks every month.
Well, and you know, people in Canada get decent health care. But when there's a crisis, like one of our employees had a baby, what do you call it when the baby, you're afraid the baby's going to stop breathing when it's an infant?
Oh,
crib death.
SIDS, sudden infant death syndrome?
Yes, and so they couldn't get to monitor because there were no monitors left in Quebec. So they came to New York to rent a monitor for their child. So someone makes supply and demand decisions. In the case of national health care, in our system today, it's made between employers, the payers, and insurance companies, but someone is going to make that decision.
Tom, there are an awful lot of people in this country who don't work for a company that provides health care benefits. Like millions.
Yeah,
that's right.
Health coverage tied to your employer, I think, is a game that doesn't work anymore. There are too many people self-employed that don't have an employer.
It used to work.
Yeah, but people used to take a job and keep it all their lives, and that's a thing of the past.
Well, are we done with Republicans?
Are we done with them?
Are we done with anything else about Republicans?
I don't know. You tell us. Is there anything left with the Republicans? Do you think Romney can beat Obama?
You know, it's the Democrats have a very admirable public relations and social communication machine. As a marketing person, I completely respect it. They do a phenomenal job. And, you know, you hear them on message. They're on message. So we have some really great companies in this country, like Apple. And if you speak to an Apple exec, he is on message. He knows what he's saying. And the Democrats are like that. And so they could very well win because they have that competitive capability in the public square, if you will.
And
I'm not placing any bets.
And what if the do you think the economy is improving? I just see some signs, you know, in my small law practice. I'm seeing some signs of a little bit of economic improvement. Do you see that where you are?
Yeah, there's definite improvement. I believe that there's an improvement in the economy. GDP is starting to grow slightly.
Are you down there in Florida where you are? Are you hearing anything about this whole brouhaha in Sanford and what happened with the young Martin boy?
Yeah, I think it's lucky for that visitor that he's Hispanic and not Jewish. Least the fact that he's Hispanic, they're holding off a little bit before they throw rush to judgment on him.
Well, who's Hispanic, the victim or Zimmerman who shot him?
The shooter, yeah.
Oh, I hadn't heard that he was Hispanic. I just heard he was white, and that was it.
Yeah.
But do you ask yourself if the shooter had been black and the white and the victim had been a middle class white kid, wouldn't that person be behind bars right this minute?
I don't think you can make that assumption at all. I just don't think it's. I mean, I know where you're trying to go, but I don't think it's a racist Sanford Police Department. I mean, the shooter was not white. He's definitely Hispanic. Look his picture up. The policemen were definitely white Southerners. So it's not that. It's got to do with what the policemen saw when they got there, and we'll have to see what the facts turn out. I certainly don't have the judgment on it.
No.
Did you hear what Geraldo Rivera said today?
No.
That the hoodie had as much responsibility for the shooting as the
wearing the hoodie sweatshirt.
Oh, his crime was to wear a sweatshirt.
It was to blame as much as the shooter.
An astounding viewpoint.
It's from Geraldo Rivera.
I know, but he's absolutely correct. The guy is brilliant, and he can sit on the side and make a comment like that. If you walk through a neighborhood with a hoodie, that's the impression that you're trying to give.
Whether you're white, black, or pink in the middle?
Absolutely. And you know what? Down here in the South, there's a lot of meth heads running around. And there's house trailers that blow up because they make meth labs and the chemistry doesn't work.
Well, that's an interesting viewpoint. Well, I guess now they're going to have a special state-appointed prosecutor to lay it all out for us. But the fact that the man hasn't been detained in any way, shape, or form, I just think is astounding. He shot the boy in the back who was holding a bag of candy and an iced tea.
Yeah. I don't have an opinion. I don't know enough to have an opinion.
I think the big part of that was the fact that the lady who called 911 from her house, that 911 tape shows that the boy was walking away from the shooter, not toward him.
No, he was shot in the back. So
yeah.
Obviously, I mean, they've determined that. Anyway, I think it's a sad thing.
It was a 911 audio, so we don't see anything from it. We only heard the screaming, and we're not sure who was screaming.
There's a lot to learn. Tom, can I ask you a question? And I don't mean this, excuse me, to be a gotcha question. I really genuinely I'm puzzled by it, and I'd love to hear your opinion. I've never seen polarization like that around us right now in all of my life, and I've never seen hatred of an incumbent president like the hatred of Obama. And I was wondering if you have a feeling about the why of that.
I do. In fact, and I think I'm partly responsible in a very tiny way. It's very clear that when we grew up, and I'm guessing we're approximately the same generation, we had three or four TV stations to listen to, maybe two AM and a couple of FM. And so our access to current information was through that one common thread. And today, with the internet and with all of the cable and everything that's turned from a technical delivery capability, you got all these different sources, and you can live in one world. You could be in your liberal world, and I could be in my redneck world, and we could never meet. And unless we deliberately reach out and look at the other side, we'll get further and further and further into our corner.
I think you're very right about that.
But I can remember.
I don't accept that Obama is A, hated, or B, hated anyone else. Obamacare was a very, very significant bill that was passed under very, very. It was definitely not by acclamation. We can argue about the terms under which it was passed, but it was clear. It's not by acclamation. It's not by any kind of large majority. And there's a very strong reaction against that and against the fiscal circumstances of the country. That's not hatred for Obama. That's wanting a change. He came in and wanted to change in one direction, and there's a group now that wants to change in a different direction.
I understand that. I'm talking more about the people that I've been listening to on the news today who are still talking about the Columbia professors that Obama studied under, and his association with Saul Alinsky, and his association with the Reverend Wright in Chicago, and they can't seem to let it go. There seems to be.
I don't know why should they let it go? I mean, George Bush was out of the oil business for 30 years, and when he went to Iraq, it was George Bush wanted to make money in oil. You always have that kind of thread on the other side. When did they ever let go that Cheney had worked for Bush Sr.? When did they ever let go of that? They never let go of it. They still didn't let go of that. When will they ever let go that Cheney accidentally shot his hunting partner? That will never go away.
Well, that was kind of funny.
Well, it'll never go away, funny or not.
I think we were pretty darn good about not holding on to our knowledge and the certainty of George Bush, George W., being a drunken fraternity boy for 4 years at Yale. That kind of thing.
Well, I think it was to his credit. They would argue that he saw the light, gave up the booze, and now he's straight now.
So,
something everybody applauds.
So that's right. So that was all in the past, is what I'm saying. And nobody kept pulling it out the way they kept pulling out these things about Obama, about his professors in Columbia and Chicago.
Well, maybe after you could send me some references on that, because I don't know what you're referring to, but I can say that Obama's past is oblique. George Bush, you know, crashed his car when he was DWI and all that stuff. All of that was out in the open. Obama's past is oblique.
In what way?
In what way?
Where's his college record and college stories?
Well, he sat down and wrote an autobiography that was more detailed than anybody who'd ever stepped into the White House ahead of him. I thought that, and when he wrote his book, he was not running for public office. I thought he was very candid about who he was and what he thought, and he didn't.
Well, but respectfully, that's his writing. So you normally look for an objective source.
Yes,
but it's all been sealed. It's all been locked up.
Are you saying that there's some kind of a conspiracy to hide his academic records?
You asked me for an explanation why those things hang around. I'm giving you some explanation.
Okay.
George Bush's college records were not sealed. You know, they were out. His mortgages, his loans, every business arrangement he had, they were out. So this one had a different control.
So what you're saying is that the administration of Harvard Business School and of Columbia and of Occidental out in California, that his academic records are not available for scrutiny by the press or by anybody else?
That's correct.
How do you substantiate that? Do you know of instances where investigations have been launched to get those grades and faculty comments and they were withheld?
No, I would throw it back to you. Show me the records. You asked me for an explanation why people felt that way. I'm trying to give you a glimpse of what their side thinks.
Okay.
That's fair.
Yep.
Fair enough.
Yeah.
Can we maybe change the subject to Tebow? Are you sorry you're not in New Jersey anymore? Because Tebow's coming to the Jets.
The man is my Florida man. He comes from my county here.
Oh, he is. Okay.
He went to high school in Jacksonville.
All right. Okay.
He played for Florida.
All right. So he's a hometown boy.
He's a hometown boy. He's my homie. Yeah.
Well, we'll have to introduce him to Snooki up here in Jersey.
I think it's great. You know, the kid is fabulous. He's got an image that's great. And, you know, it's not unlike the image that Lynn has, Lynn Sanity, you know, which is great. It's all good stuff. Someone being clean-cut, being religious and committed, and also being very successful is great. I think it's going to be a real challenge inside the Jets locker room. And I don't know how they manage the Tebow and Sanchez thing. I think that'll be interesting to see.
You think he's overpaid or underpaid at $6.2 million a year?
You know, you're paying what someone's willing to pay for you. So I wouldn't I wouldn't say an athlete is overpaid or underpaid. I'm not against people having extreme talents and making and monetizing them.
No, fair enough.
And is Plexico Burress still on the Jets?
Plexico is playing for not the Jets.
Oh, he's on the Jets.
Yeah, the Jets, yes. Right.
Okay, well, maybe Tebow can help him see the light.
Tom, how do you feel about the fact that the Jets have got a lot of dissension over this hiring?
Well, I think that's pretty natural. From what I understand, and I'm not a football expert, but I did listen to Sirius NFL Channel yesterday just because of this topic, and I was glad to see it on Dina's list when it came down. I think they have a lot of locker room tension already.
They
do. So you're dropping this big bomb in there. We'll have to see what happens.
Yeah, I agree. Whereas I think probably the Broncos are free of some of their dissension that they had.
Why do you think he's such a polarizing figure, Tebow? Was he?
I don't think he's a polarizing figure. I think he's people attach that to his Christianity, but I don't think that's the case. I think he's a young guy. He came out and he had an explosive result in an unexpected way, got fan response, and he upset the pecking order in the locker room.
Tom, do you feel that the pure, you're I think making him out to be a very pure and wholesome kind of a guy, which I think he probably is, but I'm wondering how you feel about that. Is that a reaction to what's been going on, say, with the New Orleans Saints?
Within where?
With the New Orleans Saints.
Oh, yeah. Well, Tebow's personal habits have been in all interviews, so that's well established. I'm quite impressed the NFL has come down as hard as they have on the Saints. I think that's perfectly appropriate.
I agree.
And, that's why the NFL is such a phenomenal entertainment and corporate machine. They police themselves, and they run a violent sport, but they keep it, on the one hand, exciting, and on the same time, they try to manage out the extremes, and they produce a tremendous game. I wish we could get through a couple of Super Bowls without any vulgarity or nudity.
There you go. Joan, do you have any good films for us this week?
Well, on the controversial side, it could be Game Change. And if you want pure pleasure, go see Salmon Fishing in Yemen.
And what's Game Change about?
Sarah Palin as the vice president.
Actually, it's a rather sympathetic portrait of her in some respects.
Did you read that book, Tom?
No.
No, okay. You saw it? Go ahead.
I read a different book.
I'm sure you did.
Well, it's a good film, and the film's pretty close to the book. So if you don't want to read the book, you might well enjoy the film.
You can get it all in 2 hours.
Yeah.
I agree with Linda that I thought it was really quite sympathetic in many ways. It showed her. It did not try to make her out to be a dumb person at all. It did show that she was thoroughly ignorant of foreign policy and foreign issues and had no interest in them. But she was extremely bright. I don't think there's any question about that, that she could rise to the top of many industries. Go ahead.
If I can, I do have to react and say that at the time she was painted as a country bumpkin. There were terrible, terrible rumors about her daughter and whose baby it was and all of that. And Joe Biden was built up as this paragon of diplomatic expertise, experience, a man who really brings something to the team. Do we still believe that about Joe Biden?
I don't know if we ever believed that, did we?
I certainly didn't. I'm wondering how you'd feel if Obama chose either Hillary or Elizabeth Warren to run with this year.
Elizabeth Warren's a kick. I agree with her. All of her symptoms. She puts up symptoms about the middle class and has the graph, and it's all accurate. I disagree with what she calls the causes, but I think she's a real kick.
A real kick.
What's a kick?
What does that mean?
It's enjoyable to listen to her. I mean, she strings together thoughts. She's got foundation, and she ties it back to some facts.
In other words, you think she's a competent administrator.
Well, she's certainly an excellent speaker, and she could well be a competent administrator, but she's an excellent speaker, yeah.
Well, I guess...
we agree.
Is she equally excellent thinker and political philosophizer? That's what it comes down to.
There are things that she's saying that need to be said. It's a matter of what you do in response to that. So, for example, when you talk about in the economic pyramid, the people who are on high school educated jobs are in a very tough situation. It's very hard. You need two people to support a family, two people earning. You're going to have high health care deductibles. You got high gasoline expense. It's very, very tough. The answer to that, in my view, is revamping our education system. The answer to that, in someone else's view, is to redistribute income. So, in that sense, she contributes, I think, a lot of good information to the argument.
Do you really believe that the Obama administration is trying to redistribute income?
I think that's the, if you would say, for example, like a central tenet of the right is that we want less government, and a central tenet of the left is that we want more government and more income distribution. That's the sense that I mean it.
I think you've defined quite accurately one of the major divides.
Yeah.
We probably can't agree on that, but it's nice that we agree that Elizabeth Warren is at least a good player of value on the political scene.
Is it redistribution that's what the Democrats want, redistribution of wealth, or is it they just want to be able to, we want to take care of our own?
Well, when you talk about the income tax rate, which has certainly been bandied around a lot in the campaign, where Romney, with I think $138 million was his income for 1 year, and he paid 13.8% rate of income tax. And the young woman who worked for Buffett as a stenographer was paying 35% or 36%. So if redressing that imbalance is called redistributing income, then so be it. But I mean, I think the tax code's just really is absurd. It's a joke.
Maybe Tom would agree that we need to redo both the education system and the tax code. Yes, Tom?
I was a young Marine, and I had the objective of getting an MBA, and I went to Pepperdine University at night, and I never finished the MBA, but I did take one course in federal income taxes. And then that completely changed my planning for my career.
In what sense?
Because I realized you can't break out if you're going to be a wage earner.
You can't break out?
Yeah. Yes.
Yeah. Okay. Interesting.
That's an interesting point.
Tebow's getting that money as ordinary income, and he's going to pay the highest federal rate, 9% New Jersey. You just don't break out if you're going to be earning ordinary income. And it's the income taxes on working people is just a negative thing. It's a negative.
Tom,
did
you get any of your education on the GI Bill?
Well, the veterans' benefits paid for the graduate school courses.
Did you feel grateful that the government stepped in and helped you after you had served the country?
I went into college on a Navy arrangement. I traded an obligation to serve for 6 years for a college education.
And do you
I thought that was a fair deal. I didn't think I was getting charity. I thought that was a fair deal. Nobody wanted to go in the military in those days.
I couldn't agree with you more. I think it was one of the best programs we ever had in exchange for the service that you people like you put in to give that kind of aid. But I do remember hearing at the time that many, many conservative people called it a welfare program. And I never agreed with that.
Are you referring to the GI Bill?
The GI Bill, yeah. I agree completely with Tom that he served 6 years and he got some help in exchange with his tuitions. And I think that's very fair. I think it's one of the best programs in addition to Medicare and Social Security.
You notice that the ROTC is going back now on campuses from which they'd been excluded. You see that this past week? You're going back into Harvard, and I think they're going back into Yale, which is interesting. What do you think about our present military responsibilities vis-a-vis the possibility of reinstating the draft? Would you be for that or against that?
Well, the draft makes no sense from a manpower management perspective. Huge numbers of our youth are just not qualified to be in the military, either because of educational limitation, criminal background, or lack of physical capability. And so demographically, we just have a huge issue with that.
Well, the draft seemed to work when we used it before, and people came who seemed inadequate in many ways, and by the time they were finished their training, they were serving with distinction. So it's sort of hard to write off a big segment of the country as inadequate for either health or educational reasons, but it all comes to the fore when we consider the plight of this this man, Sergeant Bales, in Afghanistan, who was on his fourth tour of duty in Afghanistan, three in Iraq and one in Afghanistan. Like, would he be in the plight that he's in now if he hadn't had to do four tours of duty? And would he have had to do four tours of duty if we'd had a draft and everybody was serving on a broader plane?
And the traumatic brain injury that I think that they're setting up his defense on, you know, I mean, it exposes our troops to that risk higher, a higher risk of that too.
Right. I mean, are the troops that we have being overextended? It seems a lot of people would say yes. You're a Marine.
The man who invades civilian houses and kills whole families has got to be tried.
Oh, there's no question of his being tried, but I'm saying, would he have been stressed to that point if he hadn't had to do that many tours of duty?
I don't know.
I don't know that either.
But I don't think the draft is an answer to that, because the government can only support a certain size of standing military. In fact, we can't afford the size that we have now. And so increasing the number of troops, I don't think that would be an answer.
I'm glad to hear you say that, because I noticed that Rush Limbaugh and some of the right leaning radio were very strong on disagreeing with that. They don't want any cuts at all, it seems, in the military.
Cuts in finance or in personnel?
Cuts in personnel. Obama made the statement that he felt we should cut back to the point where we can only have to fight one war at a time, that we can't keep a standing army to fight on every front. And that's caused a lot of controversy.
That's true, but look how they've gone in and really raped the National Guard in one state after another in an effort to get the personnel that they need. I mean, National Guard in many states has been diminished to really no working capability. And that was true down there when we had the floods in New Orleans. The National Guard wasn't available. They were all over in Iraq.
Well, the two war mentality is a lesson from World War II, where it was felt that we needed to be able to defend to the east and defend to the west.
Right.
That's where the two war mentality comes from. After the 80s, the defense posture was changed. You remember they accused George Bush of hiding from Vietnam because he went in the National Guard. Normally, if you went in the National Guard, you were not going to get called up to go to Vietnam. But the defense posture changed in the 80s to where if we went to a two-war scenario, the National Guard would be fully engaged, and that's what we've seen. So many of these units have gone over there, and sometimes multiple times.
This is another question, Tom, that I'm asking, not from the point of view of disagreeing with you, but out of curiosity, because I'm wrestling with it myself, and that is the question of unnecessary wars. I mean, should we have gone to Vietnam? Should we have gone to Iraq? Should we have gone to Afghanistan? These wars strung out for so long, and we lost so many young people's lives. And then history seems to say they were all wrong. I was wondering how you felt.
Well, I think history has shown that some of them were not productive. I mean, certainly Vietnam now wants to be our ally because Vietnam wants to be a commercial partner of ours. We opened an office in Vietnam. They're very friendly to Americans, so they kind of look back on the French and the American involvement with Vietnam as something that produced some long-term positives, not that there's not a lot of, you know, we shouldn't have had a war. And certainly the Chinese are a very big concern for them, so they would love to have very strong relationships. Could you please put a few Navy ships here? And I think there's some irony in that. You know, I think we all agree on that. Korea, I would say that if you're living in Seoul, you're pretty happy that for whatever reason, you know, the English and French and Americans came and drew a line halfway through that country. You know, for the ones in Arabia now, we went over there to squash Al-Qaeda. As far as I can tell, Al-Qaeda is squashed, and we're going to just get ourselves out.
So you'd like to withdraw now?
Yeah, I'd like to think that there's some smart policy. Like, we have Guantanamo, which has certainly been a very useful piece of territory. And we need a Guantanamo over there where we can maintain some forces so we can make sure that there's no one rebuilds a capability that we destroyed. And the only capability we're concerned about is a capability to train people come and fight us.
Right.
And you don't, Kuwait's not our Guantanamo over there?
I don't know if it is or not. I don't know. I'll have to ask JD.
Okay.
Well, on another note, your business experience took you to cultures all around the world. And it seems to me that when I see countries that have not a draft, but a two-year obligation for young people between high school and college, and they must serve either militarily or in a civil situation, that it seems to me that spreads the pain and is a good thing. And yet I feel that were that to be introduced in our Congress, it would die a mourning. It would never get voted in. But I just think when I see it in other countries, I think, well, that's really a good thing, and we should have it too. For both,
well,
both men and women.
I guess Israel has a man and woman requirement. I don't know of any European countries that have a man and woman requirement.
Yes, the French do. The French do.
Women. Okay, maybe they do it. But that's clearly the third rail issue. I mean, you couldn't bring a draft up until there was a true national emergency of enormous proportion, because you'd have to address, you know, whether you're going to draft girls.
Mm-hmm. Well,
I think I'm hearing from you, you know, some sense that, you know, 2 years of service in the military is going to be good for a person and develop the person and help them develop discipline and what have you. And if that's the case, if that's the positive that you see, then we have to ask ourselves, how do we put that in our schools?
Well, yeah, but I'm reminded of the article that ran in the Times day before yesterday with those statistics, which are now not in my head correctly, about some huge percentage of high school students being unable to pass a physical to get into the military. And
yes, and I, you know, John F. Kennedy put gym classes in every school. It's federal law that you have to have gym classes, but we don't look at the outcome. We just run the classes. My kids went to class and they had to take a test on soccer rules.
Yeah.
They didn't get fit.
I know.
Yeah.
I bet that probably the four of us around this table could agree that our educational system is in a tragic mess.
And yet look how much money is spent on it per student, more than any other country around the world. Well,
I think it needs refinement. I think it needs a lot of refinement and a lot of repurposing.
Yeah.
But I want to be clear not to bash teachers, because I think slides into teacher bashing sometimes, and that's not really the point. It's a structure.
I couldn't agree more.
That's true.
I think we agree on that, probably.
And there are so many other factors that go into that, for sure.
Yeah.
Well, Tom, is there, or ladies, is there anything else that we need to address?
Are you going to be down there all year round, or are you coming back up to the Garden State?
I get to the Garden State in the summer. For vacation.
Well, it was almost Florida-like up here this winter. You wouldn't have known the difference between Florida and New Jersey.
It's been lovely. Well, Joan, any last word from you?
No, I think this has been fun. I think there were several major areas of agreement.
Surprised? Are you surprised?
I was a little surprised because I am troubled by the this polarization.
Yeah.
But it was fun to meet you, Tom.
And Tom, any last words from you?
Well, we didn't get to talk about the Newsweek article, and I just had one comment about Newsweek. I stopped reading it somewhere in the 80s when I was reading it and said, wait, is this an article or is this an editorial or what is this thing?
Oh, on the drugs, the...
No, Newsweek, yeah. Newsweek is not really... It used to be a news magazine where if you got it once a week and you read it cover to cover, you had a pretty good idea what the international and national issues were, and it isn't that anymore. It's a series of unrelated essays, and...
That's what Time is, too. It's no longer a digest.
It's no longer a news magazine. I think they assume you're getting your news someplace else. God help you if it's just television. But, no, it was an article. I didn't know that you were apprised of it, but it was an article just about the drug habits as they've been documented in the country. And I don't know anything about drugs, and it you don't really have to know anything about drugs. So the idea was that in the 50s through the middle 80s, people were taking drugs that enhanced an exaggerated experience, whether it was aesthetic or sexual or by taste or touch. And then from the 80s onward, the drug habits of the public and whoever that is, the drugs changed, and the drugs that brought enhanced experience, exaggerated sensory effects were no longer in use, and instead the drugs were those that induced sort of a torpor, an unconsciousness, almost like a dream state, like I don't want to hear anymore, I just want to hunker down. And I thought it was an interesting comment on where the country's going. Right after World War II, it was like, give me more. It was adventure seeking. Now it's like, don't tell me anything else. I don't want to hear anything.
Tom, you couldn't even read the article?
No, I was going to say that since Tina Brown took over Newsweek, they went bankrupt and then started Daily Beast. It's been very interesting. In fact, I bought it a few times because of what was on the cover. I looked at the cover and said, wow, I should buy this. And I read Newsweek a few times. I thought that was an example of publication that repurposed and found itself.
I think you're right. I think both Time and Newsweek have become essay magazines that take the headlines and do some very good in-depth essay writing about them, helping us to go deeper and beyond the headlines.
Yeah, this was the March 26, April 2nd issue, and it was just a comment about drug appetites in America, which I read with some interest since I know nothing about drug appetites in America. And it was interesting to see how what people are seeking when they want to depart from reality, what kind of an experience they're looking for. Well, they're looking for an experience that minimizes their contact with the world around them, whereas prior to that, it was to exaggerate their impressions of the world around them. I just thought it was an interesting indicator. Whether it's true or not, who knows?
Well, maybe if we do this again, we can talk about legalizing drugs.
That would be a great topic for next time.
Yes.
Yeah.
Okay. Well, Tom, thank you so much, and we really appreciate your time. And Joan and Linda, thank you. And we want to thank our sponsors. We have Syracuse Signs in Neptune, New Jersey, SyracuseScience.com. And Joan, you have another sponsor?
Your Film One Festival in Atlantic Highlands, New Jersey, which is an annual summer festival of one-minute films.
Wonderful. Wonderful. And when does that take place this year?
In July.
In July.
July 16th.
Well, great. Well, thank you all, and have a great weekend. Thank you very much.